My Family Recipe is a new podcast from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network, bringing you cherished heirloom recipes and the stories behind them. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Pizza Quest. I'm Peter Reinhardt, a man on a never-ending search for the perfect pizza. This show is the audio version of the Pizza Talk YouTube series, where I engage in interesting conversations with some of the country's greatest pizza makers and other artisans. Thanks for joining me on this quest. Welcome to Pizza Talk. I'm Peter Reinhardt, and I am here today. We're bi-coastal. I'm on the East Coast in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're with Will Grant, who is in the Pacific Northwest, the great Pacific Northwest, in Kingston, which is close to Bainbridge Island, but a little bit of a commute between. But you're at your new pizza restaurant, Sourdough Willie's. But a few years ago, we did an interview on Pizza Quest where we talked all about your original pizzeria, the That's a Some Pizza on Bainbridge Island. So you've got two pizzerias now, Will. So we have a lot to catch up on because it's been a while since last time I saw you. You didn't have Sourdough Willie's. So
no, not at all.
Hear all about how you got the Sourdough Willie's. But for those who haven't read the interview, and if you didn't get to read that first interview, the written interview in Pizza Quest, just go to pizzaquest.com, look up Will Grant on the search engine, and you'll see that interview. And that in itself is really fascinating. But Will, why don't you catch up all the viewers with a little bit of, you know, kind of your journey in pizza, which has led to, you know, representing the United States on the pizza championship team and winning all sorts of competitions. And also, you know, this sort of, you're one of the pioneers in this country for sourdough pizza. No longer sort of the only one on the block doing it, because now it's become a rage. But you're a big part of, you know, helping to help that tip over. So how did this all get started for you?
Well, first off, I want to thank you for inviting me on the show. It's just an honor to be here with you. It's such a writer and with the team of Yodis. I mean, it's pretty amazing to be able to be on a show like this with guys I've literally idolized my whole life.
It's been such a joy for me because I've gotten to meet, you know, some of the greats and luminaries of not only the pizza world, but the artisan community, which is, you know, just a gift for me.
It is neat to think that we're going around trying to make happiness through food and through pizza, and it does kind of shine through as an art like that. And for me, it kind of has been a lifelong process. When I was 6 years old, actually here in Kingston, Washington, my parents opened up That's a Some Pizza in 1984. And it was a wild success. It really all started for them with my father had been doing different odd jobs. He'd been a lumberjack for a while. He had done security. He was a welder on our famous floating bridges here. One of them got hit by lightning, and he was a welder on that bridge, and that job came to an end because, you know, the bridge is running now. He had to look for something new, and one of our neighbors and good friends of his was doing backyard pizzas. We started kind of doing it together, and my father was always the kind of guy where, you know, someone said, I'm doing backyard pizza. My dad would say, well, I'll do one better than you. So they started this competition between themselves back in the 80s, and what they really came upon, it's kind of funny how he always goes to these competitions. He would come with his own recipe, his buddy would do their own recipe, and then he kind of meld them together to kind of find something, something beautiful in the middle. And it really showed through and with how great it was with not only this pizza, but we used our friend's great-great-grandfather's sourdough starter from the Klondike Gold Rush. And that was, at that time, 90 years old. And now, you know, it's that same starter we cook with today is over 125 years old.
A lot has happened between your dad starting this thing and you. So he was really the original sourdough pizza guy then, not you. You got it from him.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I was six, and I remember when we opened up That's a Some Pizza, it was such a, you know, there wasn't any pizza in the peninsula over here. You know, really, you know, even Seattle, there's not a big Italian culture here. So there wasn't a lot of pizza here. Yeah. It was Domino's, Pizza Hut, but not a lot of that kind of in regards to real pizza. So we opened up, and I remember the first day we opened, there was a line two blocks around for this pizza we were making there.
And this is right on the
we're on something. What's that?
On Bainbridge Island?
This actually was in Kingston first. We actually started a block away from where I'm at now, which is kind of fun. Home to Kingston here. Absolutely. Wow. So we started here in Kingston. There's a line around the block. And one of my funnest stories, really, where I got to know the sourdough starter is after we opened up the first week, the foghorns from the ferry boats behind me. We're right at the ferry
boat. We love it. It's real, folks. It's in real time.
But so here we are. We opened up. We were just insanely busy. And the way you do starter, you have to feed it beforehand. And we really wanted to do something special with it. So we were building up a lot and bringing it in. And we ended up running out of starter at the shop. So we had to make a big, ended up being about a 30 a gallon trash bucket full of starter at our house. We brought it in, and they had, it was the 80s. It was a little bit of a different time. So my job as a 6-year-old was to sit in the bed of the pickup truck, holding up this big 30-gallon deal of sourdough starter. And it was, July, and it was pretty warm. And I remember they just fed it the night before, and they didn't know much. Or they just knew sourdough starter. They knew they'd feed it and you work with it. They forgot that they doubled and tripled in size.
Yeah, that's right.
I just remember sitting in the back, this dirt road, holding on the top of this thing, and all of a sudden, the top flies off the top, and starter starts streaming down the sides of this bucket. I didn't want to get whooped, so here I am just trying to drag this sourdough starter with my arms back in, right, of starter, and it was. I remember pulling over the side of the road, looking at my father, and he was just, and his buddies were laughing at me, because here I was.
A lot of pressure for a 6-year-old to save the starter. Don't lose that.
Save the starter.
By the time you got to the restaurant, you were probably just covered in
covered. Yeah, completely covered. I've spent most of my life covered in sourdough. That's why I was sourdough Willie. I come home a lot and I'll have sourdough all over my arms. My daughter says, "Daddy, what is that?" I said, "Honey, it's sourdough. They don't call me sourdough Willie for nothing."
That's funny. Well. When I used to come home from teaching my classes on sourdough, I would have a lot of sourdough starter stuck to my forearm. I'd sit down in my relaxed chair, and my cat would jump in my lap and spend the next hour licking the starter off my arm. That became our bonding moment.
Growing happiness, I say. But after that, it was kind of, it revolutionized really the county for pizza for us. We're the first kind of small pizzerias. There were a few older ones, but... You know, once we started with That's a Sun Pizza in 84, it kind of blew up. My parents went immediately to 5 different restaurants. We had several different pizzerias in the area. Wow. It was mainly on the pizzeria takeout side of things. And it wasn't until 88 that my parents wanted to do an upscale restaurant. They wanted to do more of Italian fine dining. So they grabbed me in a suitcase, and we did a few Rick Steve seminars because he's pretty local here. And, we jumped on a plane and we went to Europe for 2 months, and we spent Christmas in Denmark, all over France, all over Italy, and all over Germany. And it was an amazing experience, just to kind of, like I said, there's not a lot of Italian culture around here. So us to really immerse ourselves over in the European Italian culture, it was really a lot of fun. It really inspired me.
That's like a trip of a lifetime, really.
It was pretty amazing, especially 8 years old. And back then, we had several restaurants. So we had the wine distributors set us up. So I remember we Italians eat so differently than we do. We went to the Moretti beer factory. And back then they used to do tours. They don't do it anymore. So the owner, came out and said hello to us and took us out to lunch in this amazing little town. I remember they kept asking me, actually my parents, "Does your son like seafood? Does your son like seafood?" And my dad, of course, "He'll eat whatever he eats. He'll eat it. Well, it's just lunch. Americans, we think lunch is a quick meal. Well, in Italy with the Moretti family, it was a 9-course lunch of different kind of fish. So I think by about the 5th course, I started liking the fish. But by that time, they're just taking the plates out in front of you so quickly, I didn't even get to enjoy the full meal. But it was really, it was a neat way to be introduced to Italian culture through the sourdough, then through the restaurant like that. It really inspired me to become a chef. So we came back home and we started working on another restaurant, that one we called That's Some Italian Sul Mare, means by the sea. So that was in Paulsville, Washington. Actually, it still is. And so we opened that up, and we actually hired a master chef from Sicily. Antonio Mancuso was his name, and he came with us and joined us. And actually, I became a chef's apprentice at that point. So I trained with him for about a year and a half. And after that, consecutively, the restaurant business goes. It's always, shuffling through different chefs. I actually apprenticed under 5 different master chefs there. That's really where I got my culinary background with everything.
You grew up in the very traditional sense of being a restaurant kid to a restaurateur.
It was traditional but untraditional in America, right? You don't do what your parents did. You don't do what your grandparents did. So people don't look at it. You always want to try to do better. And for me, I just was so proud to be able to do what I was doing. And it was so different. Probably, no, what do you do? Well, I do pizza. Well, that's what your parents do. Like, well, yeah, I like it. It's fun. So it was untraditional for Americans, but really in the true tradition.
We got a little Zoom freeze there.
That kind of apprenticeship.
So, Will, are those restaurants still in existence?
So we got at one point, this is our 13th restaurant we've made. Of all 13, we just have the core three. After we did the one in Kingston, we opened one on Bainbridge Island. That one's still open since 1984. So we've had, that's been 36 years. And we still have that to some Italian Somare in Paulsboro that we've had for 31 years now.
So now, is this in addition to the pizzerias, or is
exactly?
This-
yeah. So we just have that now. It's just Sourdough Willie's. That's some pizza, and then that's some Italian, which is really my mother and her business partner, Marty Lawrence, and then Tom Pellin have been running that for a long time.
So the family is still sort of a restaurant family.
Absolutely. Yeah. My father would always do the general managing. My mother would do the books, and then our business partner Tom Pellin, he would do all the front of the house, and then I apprenticed as the chef with the different chefs. So. We really had a strong team there for a long, long time.
But do you put any time in at the other restaurants, or are you focused totally on that's some pizza and sourdough?
Mainly that's some pizza and Sourdough Willie's. It's just, it's a lot of work, and especially with me traveling as much as I do now, it's hard, opening a new restaurant in the middle of COVID and then keeping, our restaurant we've had around for, 36 years, keeping it viable, keeping it running well. It's been a struggle, let alone another restaurant on top of that.
Absolutely is, and are the two restaurants that you're intimately involved in, are they part of the restaurant group, or are they independent? And
they're a restaurant group of their own. It's that's some pizza incorporated in with Sourdough Willie's Pizzeria, and that's some pizza. But it's just the two. Maybe really we call it group per se.
We'll talk about maybe in the second segment a little bit about where you see it all going in the future, because
absolutely
lay the foundation for it sounds like for growth and expansion too.
Yeah, it was like I said. It was in 88 that I really became a chef's apprentice. And I spent the next 5-6 years just trying to become a chef. And I remember that point where I finally, I spent a year washing dishes. I spent another year cutting herbs. I spent another year working on sauces and those. Another year working the pantry line. And my fifth year really working the sauté line. I finished everything. I said, I'm finally a chef. And my parents said, no, out of the kitchen. You're in the front of the house now. And then I tables. And then bartending and waiting tables and running the front of the house. So I really made my parents refused to let me call myself a chef. I always had to call myself a restaurateur, because that way I wouldn't just get caught in one position at the restaurant.
Yeah.
Focus everywhere with it.
Amazing opportunity for training to be in the business, to have a chance to work every single position. We talked recently with Apollonia Poilan, who's the daughter of Lionel Poulain, the famous French bread baker. And she was saying the same thing. She grew up in the bakery, literally in the bakery, like you grew up in the restaurant, and almost similar kind of jobs, tending the starter and watching and doing every job, front of the house, back of the house, until, knowing that someday she would have to take over.
Absolutely.
So it sounds like a similar situation for you.
Yeah, definitely an evolution through the restaurant, for sure, especially with That's Some Pizza and That's Some Italian.
Well, when I first met you and discovered you, so to speak, you connected. I think you wrote to me and started the conversation about sourdough pizza. It sounded like at that point you hadn't quite yet connected with this greater sort of pizza community, that you were just on the verge of that. Am I correct that you weren't part of that?
Not really, not the World Pizza team and being buddies with everyone. I was a big fan of everyone for a long time. I had, most of my inspiration comes from Las Vegas these days. And it's not just the restaurants there, but it's also the Pizza Expo there. I've been, this year, if the Pizza Expo had happened, it would have been, I think, my 19th time going to the
Pizza. Oh, so you've really been going for a long time.
I've been going for a very, very long time. But it wasn't until I went to Tony Giuliani's school that I started competing there, because I was always, it was always a mad dash. So we'd always take, it'd be like either my mom, dad, and I, and our managers. There'd usually be 5 or 6 of us. We'd all go to different seminars. We'd have to take notes. And at the end of the day, we'd have to share all those notes together, really, to to learn as much as we could about it. It was just running the floor, learning the seminars, and it really wasn't time to compete with that. We're just trying to grow as entrepreneurs and really learn as much as we could there.
And like thousands of other people who went to Expo, you were really more on the learning curve side. You weren't on the you weren't one of the presenters. You weren't as known then. You were under the radar, but you Absolutely. Were starting to build your network, it sounds like, and putting the pieces together. And suddenly something happened, because you suddenly went from sort of one of the many that go there and paying their dues, so to speak, of learning the craft and the trade, to suddenly being one of the guys now who's doing presentations, winning awards. So did that all happen when you and Tony got together? Is that when?
Yeah, well, you know, going to as many pizza expos as I had, and, you know, at first I wasn't able to go to these pizza expos. I was too young. So my mom and dad would go. And I remember one year my mom said, Willie, this kid, Tony Gemmiani, he's amazing. He throws these pizzas in the world. They did the Pizza Olympics. It's the most amazing thing in the world. And I heard this story. I was like, oh my God, I got to go see this. So I finally went to go. And the first year, it was canceled that I was able to go. So I wasn't able to see it at all. So since then, I've been trying to, you know, watch Tony and this team from afar. And it's just amazing what these guys have accomplished, and where they've traveled, and starting with the spinning like that, and just being able to watch him grow as a PTO and a person, and start from acrobatic and end at such an esteemed chef like this, too, really. Yeah. So I never thought I could be on this team, but I sure followed it a lot. I went to all his teammates' seminars, Len Cybulski, Michael Shepard, you know, all these guys. I really admire it and follow them a lot as much as I can in my career. And that's where I got all of my growth from, with those guys. And it wasn't until, you know, my mother had finally decided to retire at the pizzeria, and I just kind of wanted to take things to the next level. I wanted to, you know, she had done so much and spent so long there, you know, keeping it what it was at that point, I think 25 years. I really wanted to know, you know, it's easy to, especially when you work in these jobs as long as we have, it's really easy to get stale, and the same thing is that same pizza every night over and over and over again. It's the same round disc in front of you, shoveling by the same dough. So I wanted to kind of change things up a little bit. I wanted to learn as much as I could. And I went online and I looked for the closest pizza schools to me, and you know, everything was in New York, and then there was Tony's in San Francisco. I was like, well, I got to meet Tony, and I got to become a certified pizza guy? Like, this is just heaven for me.
That's right. It's the perfect situation.
It was a two-in-one, and plus, you know, it's on the West Coast also, so it's a lot easier for me to get.
When did that happen? When did you go to the school? What year?
That one in 2017. So
it was only a few years ago.
It was the same year I won Best Pizza in the Nation. It was literally months after that class that I did that. And it was.
So that was kind of like two things happening. You're going to the school and getting certified and meeting all the sort of the people that have gone before you. At the same time, you came on their radar because you, as an independent operator, entered the competition. Was this at Pizza Expo, that competition?
For me, it was prep for the International Pizza Expo, so I did the Pizza and Pasta Northwest.
Okay, so you did Pizza and Pasta, and won the championship there.
Yes, absolutely. I won one of them there, so I got non-traditional.
And what was the pizza you made?
I made the Gorgonzola vegetarian pizza there. That's one I had, at that point, that pizza was about 6 years old, and I just was wanted to do something a little different, and we had been making this amazing gorgonzola dressing for years and years over our salads, and I really liked it as a cream base for our pizzas. So I used that as the base, and some mozzarella provolone blend, and a little red onions, pine nuts. I really love the way that pine nuts kind of flavor things. And then after the bake, I take a little bit of feta cheese. I like those mushrooms in there. After the bake, I take a little feta cheese and let that residual heat kind of melt down the cheese so it doesn't get too dried out. So it really keeps kind of a chef, a goat cheese kind of consistency.
Yeah.
It's kind of a crisper one.
Well, plus the fact that you were making it on a sourdough crust, right? And that was
Absolutely. Probably
not too many other competitors.
No. Well, it's, for me, it's what I've been doing since I was 6 years old. That's just the way I've always made pizza. That was one of the struggles actually at the Pizza Expo, because there wasn't a lot of guys in sourdough there. It was always very heavier yeasted breads, more of that kind of that style of pizza. So I, of all the seminars in the 19 years I've been there, I haven't been to a single dough seminar there. It was kind of, I learned more at Tony's kind of adapting what I was doing. And actually, I really Tony's School for me was such an awakening for me, not only as a chef, but as a person. And so I got to go to Tony's School and I got to meet him. And then in the evening time, I'd walk down the street to Boudin's Bakery, which they have 125 or 130-year-old sourdough starter. So here I was learning as much as I could from the top pizza guy in the world, and then going down and learning as much as I could from probably the top sourdough bakery in the world. They have a very amazing museum there.
I love that place. It's on Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco.
Yes. Yeah. So it was just down the block for really, I mean, it was probably 6 blocks away or maybe a little bit more from Tony's. But I really took the opportunity there to really learn as much as I could. And that school was pretty amazing that way, just to be able to meet him. And just, you know, I never really thought I know everything. You know, I learned a long time ago, actually, that one of the few times I didn't work in a pizzeria, I was actually a longline fisherman in Hawaii. So I dropped out of high school. I was working in the restaurant. I wanted to do something new and different. And so I was told that I had a job opportunity in Hawaii. So I went out to Hawaii and became a longline fisherman out there. I spent a whole summer working there. It's pretty amazing. But one of the things I learned there is from these fishermen that had been literally doing this their whole lives, I had a different perspective and I taught them something. And really what they told me was, it doesn't matter how old you get, that you're always learning something new. And it's like that second you think you know it all is when you're irrelevant. And that's when someone else is going to come by and learn more than you and do better than you are what you're doing. So
it's such a universal lesson. It applies to almost any craft or trade.
Absolutely.
So what did you teach them? That you said that you gave them some new thoughts, and they gave you, is that the lesson they gave you, was this idea?
It was a lesson more for me, and with that, which the same kind of, well, for me, it was making pizzas in the ovens there. I had, of course, I was the pizza kid and this boat, and, you know, 300 miles off the coast of Oahu, and that we did have a little foul at this point, because the guy that was cooking before me decided every Thursday he would cook a Thanksgiving meal for us. He never cleaned the oven. So here I am cooking a pizza at 500 degrees. The oven caught on fire 300 miles from the coast. So it was kind of not a good predicament to be in. Luckily, we got it out, but we didn't have hot meals for the rest of that trip out on the water. But it was just even cleaning up after ourselves, you know. In a fishing boat, they're really, you have to be immaculate with the way you clean things. Not only are you cleaning the kitchen daily, you're cleaning the decks. You're using acetic acid on the decks to wipe off all that rust and stuff like that. So for him, he had learned from me that even the inside of the oven need to be clean, detailed, you know, and as opposed to just the whole deck. There's so many different pieces.
Those of us in the restaurant business know how hard that is, what a hard, you know, business it is to be a restaurateur. But being a fisherman is pretty damn hard too. I mean, it may be harder, you know, I'm talking about the challenges of life, being out
Absolutely.
There in the, and then to have a fire on top of it.
Exactly.
So you had some interesting sort of stops along the way in your own quest to become who you are, this trip to Italy as a kid to kind of like, you know, and then apprenticing and then actually weaving in this sort of, what would you call it? A little side trip to as a fisherman, and then bringing all those life lessons back into what you're doing now.
Well, it's been interesting too. It's come full circle for me. In 2017, when I won, then Tony added me to the team, which is a personal invite to the team. This isn't just any chef. This is the top chefs in the world that personally are invited by Tony to join the team. It's just an honor that I could, and I never thought would happen. And the first thing I do with him, you know, here I am with these, you know, the guys at the top of the industry. What's the first thing we do? We go to Italy. We go to school. And we learn how to make a Roman pizza at Talmill over in Italy. And it was just a full circle. It was literally 30 years from when I was 10 years old to, you know, here we are going to Italy again with Tony Gemignani and, you know, the World Pizza Champion team, going to some of these same cities we had gone to and being able to, just the perspective 30 years later.
Are you in your 40s now?
I am. I'm 43.
Okay, so look, but you are basically a young man. But when you describe your journey, you've had to be patient along the way. You've had amazing stuff. Like 5 years here, and another year learning this part of the restaurant, and another year. And it sounds like an awful lot. And yet these days, young people want to have all of those skill sets and life skills, you know, by the time they're 27 years old.
Right.
And
what I'm
getting out of this conversation is, you know, You can learn an awful lot, and you're just now entering your prime. You've kind of consolidated all of these skills and lessons, and you're just hitting your prime. You're just kind of like ready to take off, and now opening up a new restaurant, a Sourdough Willie.
Absolutely, Willie. Yeah.
So how long has Sourdough Willie's been open?
2 months now.
So really new.
It's really new.
It's been a great time to open, right? Right in the middle of the COVID.
It's been interesting. You know, it's been 2 years in the making for us. This was, you know, like I said, this is the 13th restaurant I made before. It isn't my first time opening a restaurant, but for a project like this, you know, after winning the award, joining Tony on the team, we knew it was time to really start investing in ourselves again. You know, what better bet than ourselves, and we would have control over what's happening. So we started looking around for buildings, and we found this one, which is really a fantastic location, but the business itself wasn't in a good state. It was an old fish fry restaurant with a tavern in the back that had been there for 30 years. And the owner was pretty burnt out with it. So we just bought the restaurant, and then we actually were able to convince them to sell the whole building here. So actually where we're at now, you can kind of see behind me there, it's we can't see because there's thick fog this morning. It's going to be in the 70s later today, but there's a ferry terminal that runs to, they actually have two ferries out of there. One goes to downtown Seattle and one goes to Edmonds, Washington. So it's really an amazing location, and it's, you know, the views when the back to, so we're only halfway done even completing it. 2 years later, we've got the pizzeria side done, but there's a whole back dining room and a bar, and I have another Forno Bravo and Napolitano pizza back there, and we're putting a Moretti Forni back there. And so we're going to actually be adjusting to a little bit of a school. I want to do my own there, but you can, from the dining room, you can see Mount Rainier with the ferry boats in front of it and Space Needle. It's really, really beautiful view here. It's really nice.
But for right now, you're already open to the public, right?
Yeah, so the front half, the slice house is open to the public. The back bar and pizza bar are still, they're probably about another month and a half out.
So your business is really people coming up and walk away, you know.
Take out, yeah. We only have a few bar seats here. And then with Washington State's regulations, you can only be at half seating capabilities. But at the same time, you can't have any bar seats. So pizza's takeout anyways, and luckily out in front here, there's a big park next to the ferry terminal so people can grab their pizzas. A lot of people will just walk on the boat from Seattle or Edmonds and just take the afternoon over, grab a pizza, have a bite to eat, and just take the ferry boat right back home.
That's great. Well, I know you were going to show us a couple pizzas today, some of your you're going to show us that championship pizza that you made?
I am, yeah. I wanted to start off with another one, too. Let me
Why don't we do this? Let's describe what you're going to do. We're running out of time in this segment, so we're going to take a little break. You'll tell us a little bit what you're going to make. We'll take a break. When you come back, we'll spend the second segment making a couple of your championship pizzas.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm going to be making the Detroit-style New Yorker, which is our new most popular pizza here at Sourdough Willie's. It's something I've taken a lot of inspiration on from Tony Gemmiani and my travels with him. And then also I'll be making my New York-style Gorgonzola Vegetarian, where I've kind of tweaked the recipe a little bit here at this location, because as you know, Sourdough's change in different climates.
Yeah, yeah.
Being this close to this humidity and the fog here, it's going to change our starter. And I'll actually show you, I won't feed the starter, but I'll show you what the starter looks like after feeding, after we get a fermentation process of about 12 hours right now.
Is the Detroit style that you're doing also made on the sourdough crust?
Yes, so all our doughs are done with sourdough here.
Kind of unusual. You know, that's not commonly seen yet, although I imagine it's going to grow as a category.
I think so, absolutely, especially because I do a really wet, I think right now most people are doing like a 76 square, not even that, I think most people are doing like a 60 to 70% hydration on the Detroit Sicilian styles. I'm doing an 80% hydration on all my doughs.
I love hearing that. Yeah, that's the way I love to do it too. That's 80% where I work at with my Detroit side. I just think it just makes everything better when it's
wet. It does. My mom has a term for it. She calls it seafoam. Is what it's like working with a fully proof dough ball of that 80%.
Gotta trademark that, man.
Right?
All right. So, Will, we're going to take a break. We want to invite all of you viewers to come back for part two. Will's going to show us two of his pizzas, and maybe in the process we'll get to see the setup here at the new Sourdough Willie's in Kingston. And, come back.
We'll be right back with more Pizza Quest right after this break.
Good food is worth a thousand words.
This is Aarti Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you, My Family Recipe, from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it, from voices across the world of food.
We'd open these tubs of dough and they would exhaust these incredible yeasty fumes, and it just smelled like nothing else. It was so intoxicating.
I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children, about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love.
Chinese people aren't like born with a download on how to like velvet chicken. You know, like that's not something that just like comes to you.
Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Pizza Talk. We're with Will Grant at Sourdough Willie's in Kingston, Washington State. And he is about to assemble a couple pizzas for us in his brand new pizzeria. You're making it. We want to learn about that cool oven that you've got spinning around behind you. But which pizza are you going to do first, Will?
First, I'm going to do my New York style Gorgonzola vegetarian, the one I won at the Caputo Cup and non-traditional.
Beautiful. So this is an award-winning pizza, which is this on the menu also?
Yes. I have this on the menu at all my restaurants. The menus do differ at both That's a Sub Pizza and Pino's Pizza. Older restaurant, Sourdough Willie's Pizza. Yeah. I've had too many restaurants. I can't remember all the names.
So that looks like a pretty good sized piece of dough there, that dough ball. How much does it weigh?
24 ounces.
Oh, that's a big pizza.
So this is a 16-inch pizza. A lot of people have different techniques for opening dough. I kind of found I do a hand toss like this that works really well for me.
Looks good. It's working good. That dough is pretty extensible.
Yeah, well, it's a big part of my dough is really making sure it's warm, especially with the sourdough. You really got to make sure it's active. And then I've made a few changes to the recipe where I use diacetic malt instead of sugar in all my recipes. I actually mill my own. So I actually have a mock mill, and I mill up all my own malts here. It's kind of fun. So it gives it a really neat texture. You can kind of see the husks in there. And
so basically, when you say you mill your own malt, so you're basically buying malted barley.
Yes.
And then grinding it in your mill to make a powder.
Exactly.
And what effect was that diastatic malt? Diastatic means that the malt's still active with the enzymes. So it's
exactly,
not,
yeah. So not diastatic compared to non-diastatic is that the fact that we actually get to have more living enzymes to natural sugar as opposed to refined sugar. And it actually, because of that, it actually helps break down sugars faster in starters with flours than it does with regular sugar. It gets my friend Carl DeSmet describes it much better than I do, but it actually breaks it down in the cells by 2 immediately, as opposed to where it does it'll go, I think, 11 or 12 with sugar, as opposed to it goes directly down with this diacetic malt. So it actually does the fermentation process is much quicker here, which when you're dealing with a 1,000-square-foot kitchen, and you really got to make sure you can get your fermentation right. It's all about timing.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll keep building it, but I'll keep asking you questions as you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned Carl DeSmet, who we're going to have in our next season of Pizza Talk, because we're kind of coming to the end of season one, but we're going to bring Carl back. He is the proprietor of the Purato Sourdough Library in Saint-Vith, Belgium, where they house about 125 starters from around the world. And I'm guessing, since you're friends with Carl, that your starter is one of those 125.
It is number 104 at the Sourdough Library.
In the Sourdough Library. That's pretty. That's a cool honor.
It's a very big honor, and it's neat. Actually, last time I went and competed with Tony Gemmiani. Actually, he wasn't competing. I was competing in London. And when I was in London, I went and I took the train after the meeting with the team, and we went and got to visit Carl DeSmet in the Sourdough Library. It was really, really cool.
I mean, you went from London, took the channel over?
Yes, and then, yeah. And took the train over through Paris and into Belgium.
So you drove all the way into Belgium?
We just took the train, and then actually Carl picked us up at the train terminal there.
and St. Vith is in Belgium, but it's not near Brussels. It's actually closer to Germany than it is.
It's such an amazing country, Belgium. They speak three different languages there. Yeah. They're in the middle of everything. So what do you put in? Vith has, I think, like four, like three-star Michelin restaurants in a town of less than 1,000 people. I mean, it's just amazing. It's pretty amazing.
What are you putting on there right now?
So these are sliced thin button mushrooms. Step out of the way. Next, I'll be putting on some more sliced thin red onions.
Underneath that, you had put some cheese down first, right? Was that mozzarella cheese?
That was my mozzarella provolone blend I like to use.
Blend. Okay. And then you put a cup, and then you squeeze some sauce. What was that sauce?
This is that homemade gorgonzola dressing I was talking about.
So that's okay. That's one of your secret ingredients, basically.
Yes, absolutely.
Is this going to be one of the pizzas? Is this one of the ones you're submitting for the new Pizza Quest pizza book?
It is, yes, absolutely.
All right. Good.
I think you were one of the judges over there in that year also at the Caputo Cup.
I was a judge at the Caputo Cup in New York City. Is that where you won?
No, I won in Jersey.
That was the next year. That's right, the following year. Yeah. I did judge, and I completely forgot. All I remember is I ate so many pizzas that day that when I left, I said, I don't think I can ever do this again.
Yeah, I did. I judged for the Caputo Cup this last year. It was a lot of pizza.
A lot of pizza. And the thing is, it sounds like the dream job. And if you have self-discipline, like you can eat one bite and move on, that's one thing. But I don't. If I eat a slice of pizza, I feel like I have to eat the whole slice. And before you know it, you're kind of maxed out.
Yeah, before you know it, you're eating 20 full pizzas.
That's right. What are you putting on now?
So that was minced garlic, and I have a great way. I can use my hand like a shaker. I'll take a little dollop, and I'll shake it over there. Really evenly distribute it.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. We'll go ahead and throw this guy in. We have the gorgonzola vegetarian.
So it's essentially a white pizza, no red sauce.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And it's baked on a on a rolled-out New York-style crust, basically. So it's really – you sell this by the slice at the
– Yeah, we do everything by the slice here on top of doing by the pizza. Here at Sarda Willie's, we only do 8 pizzas. But you have the choice of 3 different crusts. We give you New York-style, Sicilian-style, or Detroit-style. So it's a neat variation on each style of pizza also.
A reason for people to come back every day.
Right? That's it. We're putting this in this beautiful Rotoflex oven.
Beautiful. I love that. So you leave it in the pan. You bake it in the pan on the Rotoflex.
On the disc, yes. Well, you found it's easier. You know, you can put it straight on the hearth in there, but we find it's easier to train people actually using that kind of using a screen like that. It's always a uniform round. You know, as much as I love being an artist and all a pizza maker, this is a business and it's all about consistency.
That's right.
My dad used to say, Willie, if people don't like McDonald's because it's a good burger, it's a crappy burger, but it's the same crappy burger wherever you go in the world.
Right. They count on that. They count on that being the same everywhere.
They do, yeah. And so that was our gorgonzola vegetarian. We're running into a timer real quick.
How long will it bake?
That takes about 7 minutes in this oven.
Perfect. Well, while that's baking, you can start the second pizza.
Yeah, and so this is my par-baked crust for my Detroit style.
Wow.
Beautiful caramelization.
Sourdough Detroit style crust. It's about 1.5 inches thick.
Exactly. And we, how we do this dough, I kind of do it more in a Roman style fashion than I even do a Detroit style fashion. Whereas we bulk ferment it and for 4 days, and I use an 80% hydration in it. So it's a lot wetter than what most people use. And, I know I just fell in love spending all this time over in Rome and in Italy with Tony and the team. I've really enjoyed learning as much as I can from these different Italian pizza masters. Last time we went to Rome, we went to Campo di Fiero. There was we went to a 300-year-old pizza or bakery that's serving pizzas that does Roman style pizzas for 5 generations.
Antica Forno. I've been there.
Yes. Yeah,
I love that place. And they only make 2 kinds of pizza, red and white.
Yes. I got to make a pizza there also. I got to load one in the oven. And I just destroyed it. It was horrible because the accordion and up on there, you put on the paddle, you pull it out. Well, I got the back stuck on it. So to pull it out, we ripped it out. So instead of 1 meter long, it's about 2 meters long. It looked like some giant anime sword. And one of my favorite pictures from the trip was actually me outside and them showing me this horribly disfigured pizza. Just 20 pointing and laughing in it and pointing and laughing at me. But
you know, I'm sure that you were a bundle of laughs for them. They probably talked about it for days afterwards.
I think so. It was what an honor even to be in a 300-year-old bakery to do something like that.
What an honor, destroy a pizza. What an honor to be humiliated in their bakery.
Right? Well, it's not like I'm going to teach them anything, right?
Right. I met the master baker there, came to Pizza Expo last year, and great guy, and he was making them. I have photos of his pizzas that he was making at Pizza Expo, and just beautiful because they puff up, and they've got this beautiful large aeration structure.
Yes, absolutely. It's all about how it's amazing. That's the same dough as this, but it's all about how you prepare the dough and how you open the dough.
Yeah.
It's a big, big difference. Here's our Detroit style. We have a mix of a Wisconsin brick cheese, aged white cheddar, and a little bit of mozzarella cheese in there.
Awesome. And brick, of course, is the most traditional or, sort of associated with the Detroit style. But places can even get brick these days. But they do what you do. They blend it with cheddar, which gives it a little bit more acidity and edge. And then the mozzarella with
it's amazing. I found that the mozzarella leaves such great crowns. Also, we'll see at the end of this and end of the day, you can see the crown it leaves. The mozzarella adds so much in there. And then I'm using a cup and char pepperoni on this one.
So that'll cup up on us when it bakes. So you're really going pretty much classic Detroit, except for the fact that you're doing it on your dough, which is sourdough, which you're not going to see that at Buddy's or some of the old school places.
Exactly. Yeah. Besides doing my sourdough, I am really trying to source all the right ingredients for it too. I want to kind of honor Detroit. But this isn't true Detroit because my sourdough, but it's it's my homage to Buddy's in places like that.
Exactly.
We have some pinched Italian sausage here as well.
Now you're trying to get into a meat lovers.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, it's pretty amazing pizza.
No sauce, so do you sauce it when it comes out of the oven?
Yes. So that gum line is really hard to achieve and get the, with that dough right there, that's a 13-ounce dough ball that we've risen for 4 days. We've pressed it out, did another cold rise for another 24 hours, and then we did an overnight rise for 18 hours to get it to the tripling the size. We bake it off. So if I were to put sauce underneath that cheese there, it would trap that moisture with that dry. It just really make it soggy, kind of not really feeling pizza. So I bake it off, then over the top we'll do strips of a pizza sauce over it. So that way you just trap the moisture in there.
I'm sure through trial and error, you had to figure a lot of that out because
I went to Tony's school and I found out about these Detroit pizzas. After I opened this place, I actually called up both Tony and Jeff Smokovich and I said, why did you not tell me the rest of my life I'm pushing out Detroit style crust? Because I think at that point, we only had two employees and we were here literally until midnight every night pushing out all the doughs. So since then, we've kind of worked on it. You can see in here, there's the rotating around our New York style up there. You can see how it's leavened up on the edges. These are, this type of oven's called a Rotoflex oven.
Love it. It's such a beautiful oven. The stones are so, to see round stones kind of, moving through the oven like that.
It's really neat. It's, we had used the same Lange air door ovens for, I think, around 25 years. And in those pizza ovens, you could fit 12 pizzas and cook them in 15 minutes, because you have to rotate everything around and the heat, as opposed to this oven, there's several different things. One, there's two doors to it. So we can load on one side and take out on the other. So you're not kind of crawling all over each other and stuff.
Yeah.
And then because of the stones, we can fit 5 per shelf. So we're doing about 25 pizzas in 7 minutes here compared to and you don't have to rotate it to get an even bake because it's rotating itself. And
the big plus. So how many shelves are there in your oven?
There are 4 in this oven. Okay, I'll put this down here. Yeah.
I've seen them, I think, as high as 6, but 4 is quite enough.
Yes. I think Rotoflex only does 4 for these kind of ovens. I know there's some Greek ovens and some other ones that manufacture some other ones as well.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
So, and you do all your pizzas in that oven?
Yes, we do everything in there. We have we have another Moretti Forni oven that we have over. You can kind of see in the background right there. Backwards, that we use for when we're actually making the Roman style pizzas. I went to a class with Massimiliano Siva down in Florida, and he's amazing. Amazing pizzaiolo, and then just his process was so neat to learn, and that's kind of how to use. So I had to start using those myself.
Have you introduced the Roman styles to your menu?
We did sandwiches at first, but when we first opened up, people really weren't interested in sandwiches here. They were interested in the pizza. I mean, we were selling out every single night for 2 weeks, like I said. So it was just kind of nuts. So we were pushing out all these doughs every night. So I had to double our pans. So we have about 150 pans now. And just people just are going nuts for this Detroit style and Sicilian style. And I was really blessed too. My local NBC affiliate came actually at our 2 week mark here and did a big expose on us. So Pacific Northwest, just in the region. And you know, with COVID times, you know, you can't go to Europe, you can't go to Cali, but you can go get a pizza at your pizzeria. So we're getting people from all over the state driving up just to try our pizza because they saw us on TV.
Well, I'll tell you, it just tells you the power of pizza, because the pizza restaurant community has pivoted probably better than any other segment. And the public is, you know, proving that what we always knew, which is that everybody loves
pizza. Well, we have it's perfect for takeout. Excuse me for a second. I'm going to have to get this pizza out of the oven.
All right. We want to see that.
Travels well. You have Neapolitan style pizzas. They don't travel well. Sourdough, thicker crust pizzas, they retain the heat a lot better as well. So you've got a quality product that people want to try. This is what they're going to try.
Did you say earlier that you are going to be setting up a wood fire oven as well?
Yes. So I have already purchased a new. When we're done over here, I'll show you the other side. I have a whole full liquor bar, and then half of it's going to be liquor, and then the other half's going to be that Moretti 40 and the Forno Bravo over there. And I actually want to do a little school over there. I want to do the Pacific Northwest School of Pizza there.
And that's awesome.
Talk to the Academy of Pizzioli to be doing their first Italian pizza school here in the United States also.
So, you're going to do it right there at the restaurant?
Yeah, absolutely, just like Tony does. It was amazing seeing how he inspired me and the confidence he gave me with what he was doing. And I just really want to share that also. It's such a neat, like you see, you talk about these pizziotis sharing things, you know. It's not many people I look at more to than like Tony Gianni and John Arena, and just their philosophies on life and sharing. And it's so much a philosophy, even with sourdough starter, you're growing happiness, right? We take the starter, we feed it to create this dough that feeds these other doughs. Actually, I think of it more of you're feeding the sourdough starter into the pizza dough as opposed to using it in the pizza dough. So for me, I'm growing this pizza for people to enjoy and spend time with their family at home. So in a sense, growing happiness here, especially in American culture. People don't sit down to eat together a lot, right? It's go, 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 go. So when they get a chance to all sit together and have a family experience, they're doing that over our pizza. So I think it's really a powerful thing, especially in this day and age.
I think that you've mentioned that phrase, growing happiness, a few times. That's got to be the sort of almost the motto of the restaurant. You ought to have that on your sign.
Yeah, it's the culture of culture, right? So here we got our gorgonzola veggie.
Beautiful. Do you do it when it comes out of the oven? Do you garnish it with anything?
What's that?
You garnish it with anything, or is it ready?
I'll be putting the feta cheese. I'm just going to cool off for a second. I'm going to take a look at this New Yorker over here. Let's see how she's doing. You can see here she's not quite ready yet. You can see the cheese edges, a little bit of the crown.
I'm sure you can see it. It's climbing up the pan. Yeah,
exactly. And what we're looking for is really kind of a foamy texture to the cheese that actually kind of separates and starts browning over the top. So we're going to leave that in for a few more minutes while we dress this gorgonzola veggie.
It looks like you've done this before. You've got everything kind of timed very nicely here.
I'm trying to. It's, you know, that's what a chef does, right? It's all about timing.
Well, that's it. I mean,
the salad after the entree or the dessert before the salad.
Well, you've paid your dues over the years, so you know it's integrated into your flesh, basically.
Thank you. Yeah, I know it's a part of what I do. It's just like you said. It's been doing it so long. It's just second nature, kind of, to me.
Right.
There's the booty shot I was showing you there. It was
beautiful.
Yeah, the caramelization.
The great underskirt.
Yes, the booty shot.
everybody is, I never heard it called the booty shot, but that's right. It's everybody's favorite Instagram sort of,
right? I call it the
food porn shot. You
know? Yeah, it's a great pizza. You know, when I competed with this, I wanted to do something that I was proud of that I had kind of come up on my own. You know, I didn't come up with the start or with the dressing or the starter, but, you know, the recipe with the starter I came up with my own, and then the recipe for the pizza.
So you cut that into, what, 6 slices?
When I do my slices, I do 6. When for a full pizza, I'll actually do it in 8 slices.
So what, and what do you sell a slice for when someone
comes? $4.50.
$4.50?
Uh-huh.
That's good. That's a good price, yeah.
Portion of some feta cheese. So it's really important when you're using feta cheese like this, I dry it out as much as possible and I put it in a food processor. Really, it gets it really airy and light and fluffy also. So I'm just gonna.
That adds not only the wonderful cheese flavor, but a little bit of saltiness to it.
Exactly, yeah. And then, like you said, the texture to it also.
Is that the same thing going on in the second container?
Then we can. And see how already the residual heat is melting that feta cheese. It's really it's a fun pizza. I'm really proud of it.
Yeah, the layers of flavor and wonderful structure. Yeah, great. Look at the way it aired up. All sourdough, no commercial yeast, 100% natural leavening, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
beautiful. And
that's a fun pizza. That's the Gorgonzola vegetarian.
That is how you won the Caputo Cup Championship that got you onto the world championship team that went to Italy. And it just, it's funny how, you know, one victory can open up so many other learning lessons for you.
It's pretty amazing. I got really lucky too, because not only did I win first place in non-traditional style, but my manager using my dough won second place in traditional. So we actually were the top ranked pizzeria in the nation for a year because of that.
I remember that. Yes, now it's coming back.
I forgot. There was a mess up in the scoring at first, so we didn't know that my manager had gotten second place.
What's his name?
Raymond Allen is his name.
Raymond, is he still working with you, Everett?
Unfortunately, no, he is not.
Too bad.
So here we are with, you can see how it's foamed up on top. We got the beautiful, let's see.
In fact, you baked that on a par-baked crust, shorten the baking time.
Yeah, so it shortens the baking time, and then with such a high hydration dough also, there's really no way to put toppings on 80% hydration dough. It just would deflate in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So all I need to do is kind of get my par in here, lift it up, see the crown.
And the frico around the edge. Great color. Great caramelization.
Thank you. Yeah,
very dramatic with the crown. You and you must be friends with Justin De Leon.
Yes,
because yes. He showed us his Apollonia's. You know, he's famous for his crowns, and I think his Instagram shots are all about those dramatic crowns that he gets.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff for sure. This is a fun pizza. So I take a lot, like I said, a lot of inputs with Tony in this one. We call him the New Yorker, but it's just a fun idea with this Roman and these different pan-style pizzas that is such a different process than what we're used to, you know.
Yeah.
With my Gorgonzola vegetarian, we ended up doing all of our, sorry about the light behind me, doing, you know, everything before time now, or right before, as opposed to the pan-style, you know, it's a wetter dough, it's a longer process, you know, I think. Yeah. To mix New York style dough, it only takes me 10, 12 minutes. To mix an 80% pan style dough, it takes me a little over an hour. Because really? Adding in the water to the flour, you have to take your time. You have to make sure the heat doesn't get too hot with it. You don't want that bowl friction, you know, destroying, you know, getting over, you know, 70 degrees in that thing. So you got to keep some ice water in there, do it slowly, kind of let it, because I've done it before. I tried throwing everything at once. It's just the soup. That's actually one of the biggest things I've learned with Tony, going to Italy, going to Talamale, going to Castigliano, learning about how, you know, the different styles and the different absorption rates of these different flours also. I'm really blessed here in Washington State to have Shepherd's Grain flour, which is a locally farmed and milled flour, which is really, really special, I think, to be able to have people walk in the door and say, oh, I grow for shepherd's grain. Let me see your bag of flour. And you look this side of the bag of flour, and it said, you look it up online, it was their farm. So literally, they got to eat a pizza made from their flour, and they, you know, they were able to drive the 3 hours here to do it.
Washington State is really, really taking the lead, I think, in creating regionally specific, you know, strain wheat and all the work that's being done at Washington State.
Yeah, the bread lab there with what they do for farmers too. And it's, you know, as a chef and a restaurateur, as a person, you want to support your neighbors, support local people. So being able to support local farmers like that, that's really strong. That resonates in everything you really do. I mean, especially in a worldwide economy is falling apart like this, when you can support someone down the street. Like, I don't sell any big brand beers or anything like that. I only support local breweries, local distilleries and stuff like that too. It's a way to, you know, help your own economy. You know, being a restaurateur, you realize you go to a restaurant, it's a chain, you give them your money, those tax dollars are going somewhere else. If you stay to a local mom and pop place, you support someone locally, that gets supported locally here, and you support yourself.
You put it all in the community. So you still have to put some sauce on that, right?
Yeah, so you can see I've been heating up this sauce for a little bit. Tea is hot sauce also. You don't want to do a colder sauce. And that was where we do the racing stripes, right? That's what Pudgy. First, I better cut this thing.
Why do you call this the New York?
This is called the New Yorker. And it's kind of funny. When I do it on the New York-style crust, it is the New York New Yorker. But,
But is it the New Yorker because of the pepperoni? It's
because it's homage to Tony Gemmiani's New Yorker pizza. It's really where it comes with me. Yeah.
I gotcha. Okay.
So we take our slices. Now, and I'll sauce it differently, too. If I'm going to do it by the slice, I'll just do a little dollop on each piece of pizza there.
Yeah, rather than stripes.
Yeah, because it's a better presentation. You're pulling out of the slice warmer. It's it's all one piece like this. I'll do a... On the one side, I'll do dollops. On the other side, I'll do the racing stripe. That's the racing stripe. Even to the point, all of our cheese pizzas we call the red top, because that's supposed to be the racing red tops in Motor City. And then by the slice, I'll kind of go like that.
Oh, man.
Then we do a little giffinata basil.
I wish I could reach through that screen right now.
No, where is Willy Wonka's smell-o-vision when you need it, right?
Exactly.
It is different out of basil.
We're working on that app right now.
Then this is one of the things I learned from Tony. Is doing a pastry bag with a little mix of ricotta cheese.
And that would take it to another level. They always say that, you know, that cooking is taking ingredients and doing something to them. But gourmet cooking is taking ingredients and doing something to them and then doing something else to them. And this
today it's all about after. And also, you know, it's all about sweet and salty, too. That being said, amazing Mike's Hot Honey here.
Boy, Mike's just showing up. Mike's getting a lot of product placement in these videos because a lot of people are using his honey now.
It's a pretty neat product.
I have one of those squeeze bottles at home, too, and I'm putting it on everything. I even put it on blueberries.
Right. Ooh, that sounds amazing. Yeah. A buddy of mine with King Umberto's, they even make drinks with it. That's a pretty kind of neat idea also.
That's a beauty. That's a beauty.
The New Yorker.
Real close so we can see that structure. Look at that. The caramelized crust, the nice spongy interior probably melts in your mouth, right? Like almost like cream.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Wow. Love that shot. Man, you just out Instagrammed there with that one. Oh, man. Will, thank you so much for making those.
And, absolutely.
And we really, it's been exciting having you on, hearing the story, hearing about, you know, the part that I didn't remember was how many years you spent at every station and learning piece by piece the trade, the craft. And this is, I think, for me, the big takeaway of today is to realize, folks, that put in the time early. Don't be in such a rush to get it all figured out right away. Learn the craft. And by the time you get all the pieces put together and you've connected the dots, you're still young enough to, like, now you know, kind of move into the next act in
absolutely,
your
journey. Absolutely, yeah. That's what I'm kind of doing here with Sourdough Willie's and school, Pacific Northwest School of Pizza and Academy Pizza, or Academy Pizzioli as well. It's kind of building on everything. It's all about layering, just like a pizza. You got to start with your good base, your good sourdough. You got to find a good mozz. You got to find that perfect mix of cheese, the provolone. You got to be able to find, you know, the right toppings that really fix it as well. Even like in my ingredients, even my dough, a lot of people use extra virgin olive oil. It's too strong for me. I like milder oils of mine. It overtakes that sourdough flavor. So finding what works for you and just plan on playing the long game. That's what we're all here for. The short game gets you nothing. The long game is really where things can really fly.
That's a great lesson. And also just the fact that you've trained and thought globally, but you act locally. And I love that.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on here. It's been quite an honor.
Well, folks, thanks for joining us. Will Grant and at Sourdough Willie's, but also at, That's Some Pizza. That was your mom and dad started That's a Some Pizza like 40 years ago, and now Will has taken everything in the pizza side to a whole other level by basically putting in the work, putting in your 10,000 hours, as they say, you know, and honoring what Tony said, which is to respect the craft.
Absolutely. That's I think should be everyone's motto. Whatever you do, do the best job you can at it, and you're going to go from there.
Well, it's great to see you again, Will, and congratulations on all your success, on your growth, and I look forward to seeing you at whenever we can get the tribe back together.
Whether it be a grain conference or a pizza expo, I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Whatever comes first, I'll be seeing you. And thank you all for joining us on Pizza Talk. We'll see you on the next episode. And hopefully we're going to get one of Will's pizzas in the new Pizza Quest book, which will come out next year.
So, hopefully this one right here.
There it is. That looks good. Good enough to eat. Bye-bye, folks. We'll see you next
time. Thanks so much.
Pizza Quest is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.